the stadium, Vinny schmoozes in luxury suites.
From the left, dear, one serves from the left.
Whatever's gotten into you, Calpurnia?
Haney posts up in the bleachers.
You're all garbage! Yeah.
The only place to catch Vinny and Haney together is on 105.7 The Fan.
Vinny and Haney back here on 105.7 The Fan. Cordell Woodland filling in for Bob Haney here with Vinny Serrato. Quick Draw McGraw behind the glass. Coming up at 11.15, we'll get to the whip around, see what went on in the world of sports last night. And at 11.30, we'll do an AFC North whip around with a lot of different beat reporters for teams in the AFC North. A lot going on in the AFC North over the last couple of days, so we'll have plenty to talk about there. But we got plenty to talk about now with Kyle Phoenix, who covers the Ravens for Baltimore Beatdown, also does the Late for Work Monday edition on Ravens.com. What's going on, Kyle?
Cordell, you started it off with Boston on the intro song. Love it. Excellent choice.
Yeah, and that's the people. It's Total Request Thursday, so yeah, thank you to the people for requesting a great song. And Kyle, we've been looking at a great Ravens offense here over the last couple of weeks. It feels like really ever since that Cowboys game, and that's kind of where it started for me, the rushing attack fully getting going, they haven't looked back as an offense. Where are you in terms of how far this offense can take this team?
I mean, this offense can take this team anywhere. You've seen it over the last few weeks. They are capable of doing so. You know, execution is always challenging. The further in the playoffs you get, into the season you get, and injuries are always going to be a factor. So there's concern there. But this team, at their best, is the best. You know, you can see it in the way that they have executed. And it starts with the run game, starts with Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson, but it has spread to the effectiveness of tight ends, of wide receivers. Both Rashad Bateman and Zay Flowers are getting going. And I mean, everything is truly firing, for this offense. And it feels, like the only time they do no wrong is a certain, a lapse or two that's self-inflicted. It doesn't feel like teams are slowing them down. It's just if they don't execute properly, that's where the issues arise.
Hey, Kyle, what do you think George Warhop's presence is? I mean, we saw Saleh get cut, and I know that was a Joe B guy. And then, I think Falele's really stepped it up. So what do you think George Warhop's presence has been?
You know, it has to have been a positive, an incredibly challenging moment. He was the guy that the Ravens chose and doesn't slow down no matter tragedy. Able to help work with his players, work with the situation, turns into a more effective offensive line has been greatly impressive. I mean, we all remember the first 2 weeks of the season. It was a strugglesome affair for Fa'alele, for Andrew Voorhees. I mean, even at times you were seeing McCary and Rosengarten struggle. The only consistent rocks have been Stanley and to a degree, Tyler Linderbaum. And now we're seeing, a 380-pound, 6'8" right guard sprinting, 20 yards to try and get upfield and help block for Zay Flowers and become more effective. So, he's excelled in being able to help develop this offensive line that the Ravens had so much faith and trust in and believe in, and you're starting to see the fruits of that labor.
We're talking to Kyle Phoenix from Baltimore Beatdown and from Ravens.com. is Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan. And Kyle, let's go to the defensive side of the ball. It hasn't been as great to this point as it's been for the offense. Now, they're arguably the best rush defense in the NFL right now. I think statistically they still are. Pass defense has left some to be desired and has been inconsistent at best. Where are you on the pass defenses? We're going into week 7. Are you starting to feel like this may kind of be who they are, or do you have the understanding of they have a lot of talent on that side of the ball? They will still get better.
Yeah, I think that they'll still develop. They lost a lot of, talent in the coaching room this offseason. Not just Mike McDonald, but, as we talk more about the secondary, Denard Wilson is who they lost, defensive backs coach. And wherever he's been has turned to gold. You know, the Eagles secondary was incredible. And then he joined the Ravens. They were the number one secondary. He helped to develop Kyle Hamilton, who was already going to be a good to great player. And then he was a first-team All-Pro. He's arguably the best safety in the NFL last season. Marcus Williams was an effective player during his tenure. Even when he was with one arm, he was still battling out there, you know, and he was making effective plays. It wasn't to what he was known for prior to suffering injuries with the Ravens. But, you know, and then you look at the cornerbacks that they had, you know, so a combination of that plus the hopeful return of Arthur Millett, who I think kind of really – helps to do the dirty work for this kind of offense in the slot and all the tools that he brings that can also help to benefit the other cornerbacks in the room. You know, you hope that Marcus Williams can start to find those, you know, plays and make the decisions necessary for the secondary to take that second step. But also just looking over some of the numbers, I mean, the Ravens have forced like the third most tight window throws or their highest percentage. It's not that they're just not covering guys. It's that they are, and the guys that are getting paid, you know, tens of millions and some of the best in the NFL that they're going up against are just making more plays. I mean, Humphrey's playing well. Stevens is playing well, but it's just, you know, he doesn't maybe, you know, there's times he doesn't get his head turned around in time. There's other times that he puts his arm in between a defender's arms and their body, and they still manage to make a miraculous catch in the end zone like we saw against McLaurin on like a fourth and goal. I mean, the secondary, I feel, is going to further improve. To what degree, we don't know. You know, I'm not going to say they're going to turn around, be the number one pass defense, and they're going to be incredible. But I don't think that they are a bottom 10 pass defense when it's all said and done.
Well, Tennessee's pass defense is one. What Denard Wilson is at right now, too. So, but the thing is Marcus Williams is playing awful. Awful. He's playing so deep. He's playing so soft. He's playing not to get hurt. I mean, watching him, you know, he turns hits down, and when he tries to tackle somebody, he doesn't put his face in there. He, you know, bear hugs people.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, I've been watching some of his plays and trying to, you know, better understand what's going on, you know, because, you know, people just see the PFF grades and immediately go,
I've never seen the PFF grade, but all I do is I watch the film and he stinks.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not saying you are. I'm just, you know, as somebody that wants to also understand this game, not from just the grades, but also like what about his film is bad. You know, that's what I'm seeing too, is he used to be a much more, you know, hard hitting safety. He used to be able to, you know, put guys on the ground. And it doesn't look like he has the same aggressive nature. And I'm sure there's part of it is just, you know, you go from being in a healthy physical safety with the best range in the NFL, of, you know, kind of his generation. And suddenly that kind of aggressiveness, you know, maybe turns into timidity when you suffer a couple injuries and on like routine things, you know, it wasn't like he suffered his injuries in some unique situation. It just looked like routine plays that he was accustomed to making. And now it's, you know, it's not resulting in, you know, an injury. And so when you go from that, I'm sure there's some, you know, mental aspects of it. That's really challenging to go through. You know, I'm not trying to excuse the guy fully from that and saying it's okay, but you know, I'm sure it's gotta be something that he's working through and hopefully he does, because, you know, the Ravens paid, you know, one of the biggest contracts of free agency that year for him. And we've seen what he can be, and he is a top-tier safety. So the effectiveness is – it kind of will need to ultimately be him, because your cornerbacks can play great and you can have Hamilton. But, you know, safety, that free safety, the ranging guy in the deep is can make everything so superior – for any defense. You've seen that with the greats in years prior, whether that was Ed Reed for the Ravens defenses. Earl Thomas was a guy that just turned the Seahawks secondary into the Legion of Boom. It all kind of started with him, I would argue. And then they got stars from there. So Marcus Williams is a guy that can elevate himself and with that, the entire team. And that's where the Ravens are really hoping to get a guy that, you know, we've seen in the past and are hoping for.
Kyle, great stuff as always. Really appreciate your time this morning. How could people keep up with you and follow your work?
Yeah, you can check me out on Twitter, at Kyle P. Barber. You can check out the work of myself and my wonderful staff over at BaltimoreBeatdown.com. And also check out my work on BaltimoreRavens.com. I write the Monday and post-game editions of Late for Work. And I also am pinch-hitting for our other writer, Kevin Eck, over the next 2 days. So I published this morning's Late for Work. I'll be publishing tomorrow's. And then you'll maybe even get Monday and Tuesday out of me, too. So a lot of work that's coming out there for you all to enjoy right now. Cordell, have a wonderful rest of your day. Same with you, Vinny.
Yep,
and
thank you.
Maybe I'll see one or both of you at the castle.
Excellent. Excellent. Kyle, appreciate it. We'll talk again down the line. Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll get to the whip around, check in and what went on in the world of sports last night. We'll go out to L.A., check out that beatdown the Dodgers ended up laying last night. And we'll also go to some WNBA finals. Got a huge buzzer beating win for the Liberty. We'll check in on that as well. That's next here on The Fan.
To you by Fox Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes, the best crab cakes in Harford County.
105.7 The Fan.
Shohei 16 for his last 19 with runners in scoring position. That's where Smith is on second. The pitch is hit high in the air, right field, hooking toward the pole, and this ball is fair and gone. Shohei Ohtani unloads.
Vinny and Haney back on 105.7 The Fan. Cordell Woodland in for Bob Haney here with Vinny Serrato. Quick draw McGraw behind the glass. It's the whip around. We're looking around the world of sports. Last night, and you heard that audio courtesy of Dodgers Radio Network, Shohei Ohtani, he gets the three-run home run in the top of the eighth to make it a 7-0 game. The Dodgers would go on to win this one 8-0. Max Muncy got a solo shot in the ninth inning to add insult to injury. Dodgers take a 2-1 lead in this one. Michael Kopech, he picked up the win in relief, only pitching an inning. But Walker Buehler, he started the game, goes 4 innings, 3 hits, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts, 90 pitches, doesn't allow a run. That's pretty good shutout day for the pitching staff as a whole. And like I said, now the Dodgers have a 2-1 lead, game 4 later on tonight.
Yeah, it's up in New York. And the thing about it was Buehler was pitching well, but the Mets had a couple of chances early. They had bases loaded or second and third and one out, and the catcher was up, and he struck out, and then he got Lindor to strike out too. And then the Mets pitcher couldn't field a ball. That was their problem. I mean, he gave them a couple runs early. So it seems like when the Dodgers win, it's a blowout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when the bats wake up for them, it's kind of night-night time. Game 4 at 8:08 tonight. You got the Yankees and Guardians. Game 4 of the NLCS. Game 3 of the ALCS is tonight. Yankees-Guardians out in Cleveland. Cleveland looking to get on the board right now as they're looking a possible sweep right in the eyes. They've got Boyd on the mound tonight. Cole Schmidt on the mound for the Yankees. Guardians got to find a way to put up some runs, man, because this Yankees team, just like we mentioned with the Dodgers, when their bats are waking up, it's a scary sight.
And Judge hit a home run last game, so if his bat wakes up, because he's been batting over, you know, and Stanton's the one that's brought him this far. So, yeah, if Soto and Judge, those guys are hitting, Yankees are going to be tough to deal with because they can score runs. And Cleveland hadn't been able to score.
Let's go out to the hardwood. It's the WNBA Finals right now. And it was a nail-biter last night until the White Mamba took the game-winning shot.
8 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter of Game 3. 4 seconds. Ionescu will heave. And hit! Sabrina Ionescu! With the biggest shot in Liberty history.
That call courtesy of ESPN. The Liberty would go on to win thanks to that 380-77 over the Minnesota Lynx. The Liberty now hold a 2-1 lead in the series. Sabrina, she finished with 13 points in this one. Brianna Stewart, 30 points, 11 rebounds, 4 blocks in the win. That was big time yesterday. That was from Steph Curry range, the confidence, and you know, she's nicknamed the White Mamba for a reason. She comes from that Kobe lineage, and you know, cut from that same cloth. So it was good to see. I mean, Sabrina, we talk about a lot of these great players that have come out of women's college basketball here recently. It's quite a few of them on that Liberty team, and led by Sabrina and Breonna Stewart themselves. Those are two of the best female college basketball players I've ever seen.
Now, Cordell, I hate to say it, but I kind of checked out when Caitlin checked out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's what a lot of people have done, because their ratings and attendance has been horrible. So can you imagine what it would be on all these national shows if the Fever were playing and Caitlin Clark? The ratings would be off the charts, and they'd be talking about, on all these shows, they'd be talking about. That's what the WNBA, like, to take the next step. You know, I mean, not to say that these women aren't great, which they are, but nobody cares unless Caitlin Clark's playing.
Unfortunately, it'll be a long time before that's the case, because the Fever stink, and they have a long way to go before they start being able to compete with just the Liberty alone. Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll get to an AFC North whip around, check in on some of the division rivals in the division. A lot going on out in Pittsburgh with Russell Wilson potentially being the starting quarterback this week. We just saw Amari Cooper get traded from Cleveland to Buffalo, and the Bengals just stink right now. So maybe they're another team that could be busy leading up to the trade deadline. So we'll talk to a couple of beat reporters for these AFC North teams next here on The Fan.
Bengals.
Tossed down. Miles Garrett gets home.
Steelers.
Pressure ball out. Picked up. What? Touchdown Steelers.
Ravens.
Lamar winding up. Going deep for Big Ben. He's got it.
The toughest division in football. Notes from the North. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan.
Vinny and Haney back on 105.7 The Fan. Cordell Woodland filling in for the Bobster here with Vinny Serrato. Quick Draw McGraw behind the glass. Let's take a quick whip around the AFC North. So much to get into. Let's start out in Pittsburgh and bring in Brian Bacco from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Brian, really appreciate your time this morning. Let's just jump right to it. We saw the news come out about the potential change at quarterback, going from Justin Fields to Russell Wilson. What do you think kind of went into the decision to potentially swap quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think a little bit of sloppiness lately in the play from Fields is part of it. You know, I do think that if they were 6-0 right now instead of 4-2, and the overall numbers were better, overwhelming, that he could have held on maybe at least till the bye week or longer. But there's been a few too many mishaps, and you know, a lot of the success against the Raiders game when they put up 32 points, they were getting short fields from the defense and even the special teams. So I think that combined with Russell Wilson being the first guy in and getting that QB1 proclaimment after training camp in the preseason is setting us up for the winds of change swirling here now in Pittsburgh.
Well, Brian, how's that O-line going to hold up for Russell Wilson?
Great question, Vinny, because they're down to their third string center when camp opened. Ryan McCollum, an NFL journeyman who's been on the practice squad for the most part here, but they lost their rookie second rounder Zach Frazier to an ankle last week. Doesn't seem like it's going to be long term, but man, good luck to McCollum, undrafted guy in 2021, who now gets to deal with Quinn Williams on Sunday Night Football. We know that the shorter quarterback sometimes can be affected a little bit more by that interior pressure. Interesting recipe for Russell Wilson to have to step into in his first start.
Now, Brian, who on this offense do you feel like are the winners and losers of this potential move? Who benefits from this quarterback change, and who probably whose numbers or production probably takes a hit due to this change?
Well, I think subtracting Justin Fields is not great for the overall running game. I think that's kind of generally accepted. The mobile quarterbacks can keep defenses off guard and help guys like Najee Harris or Jaylen Warren. But you know, I think with Russell Wilson, the biggest advantage that he has on Fields at this point in their careers, other than the intangibles of a Super Bowl winning 35-year-old guy as opposed to a a fourth-year player who was, you know, 10-38, I think it was, in Chicago, is the deep ball ability. I mean, Russell Wilson, I worry about the mobility, to go back to Vinny's question about playing behind this beaten-up O-line, but I don't worry about the arm strength. I think that is still very much there for Russ. The moonshots to George Pickens could be an interesting thing to unlock in this offense. That's me. And Calvin Austin, too, their third-year receiver, who's small. You know, he's about my height at 5'7", but he can really take the top off of a defense, and they're playing the Jets, who are leaking oil right now at the cornerback position.
Brian, great stuff, man. Really appreciate your time this morning. We'll check in again down the line.
Thanks, Brian.
My pleasure. See you guys. Yep.
All right, let's go out to Cincinnati now and check in with Ben Baby. He covers the Bengals for ESPN. Ben, really appreciate your time today, and it's been a really slow start for this Bengals team as a whole. They're coming off of that tough loss to the Ravens a couple of weeks ago. Where do you see the Bengals kind of going from here? Is there any sense of panic right now in Cincinnati?
Yeah, I don't know if a sense of panic is the right word, but Joe Burrow said there's a lot of urgency in the building, you know, especially when you have the stakes of the games this early in the year. When I asked him about that, because last week you couldn't really afford to lose to the Giants, and they came close, and they were able to pull it out on Sunday Night Football. And this week, the same thing remains the same, you know, falling behind 0-2 in the division, dropping to 2-5. That would be a very difficult hill to climb if they want to make the postseason. And this team, you know, is as good as the Bengals have been, even when they were the AFC North winners. You know, they've always struggled with Cleveland. I think a lot of that has to do with Myles Garrett. You look at him and the numbers, especially against Joe Burrow, 8 sacks, 16 quarterback hits, completion percentage when Myles Garrett gets the first pressure, under 30%. So, for the I think that's going to be the first priority if the Bengals want to beat Cleveland.
How about the defense? Because the defense, you know, like prior to the Ravens game, I watched. And then after the Ravens game, And that defense, they've got to get better. I mean, they're not fast in the secondary. That's one of the big things.
Yeah, I think the safety combination is going to be the big thing to watch as they move forward. We're seeing, you know, second-year player Jordan Battle, who started last year towards the end of the season, he's starting to get rotated in more, it sounds like. He's getting more and more trust. Initially, they looked like at the beginning of the year, they wanted Geno Stone and Von Bell, who was previously with the team, to really solidify that secondary after just a lot of miscommunication and poor play last year, moved Dax Hill to cornerback. And so far, I think that's been an issue. And then the defensive line just not being healthy has been a problem. And, yep. And they believe that as that line got healthier, it would get better. And we saw a little bit of that last week against New York, but that's definitely got to continue this week. And for being honest, I don't expect them to be challenged a ton through the air against Cleveland, so I think they're going to have to contend with Nick Chubb on Sunday.
Ben, we've seen a couple of moves made around the NFL over the last couple of days, and we know T. Higgins is a guy right now that's in a contract situation. Do you expect the Bengals to make any drastic moves as we get closer to the deadline?
Yeah, they're not really a deadline trading kind of team. You know, I think that if they were to take a couple more losses, it's something they should consider because, you know, I just don't know what the long-term future is for T. Higgins here. It seemed pretty clear that they weren't going to be able to afford to pay him and Ja'Marr Chase, especially when you look at the year T's having. He might be having his best year yet. As Joe said yesterday, he's playing with a chip on his shoulder and wants to prove that he's worth the money that he's been asking for. And I think that if he goes to another team, he's easily going to be their top receiver and be really productive. And it's been a big reason why the Bengals offense has been one of the best in the league this year. And so, you know, I don't see them making that move, but I think that's something that they should consider. And you know, if they don't, I think they will get some blowback if they end up letting him walk for nothing.
Ben, great stuff, man. Really appreciate your time today. We'll talk again down the line.
Yep, thanks.
All right, let's take our last trip out to Cleveland. Talk to Emmett Golden. He covers the Browns from ESPN 850 out in Cleveland. Emmett, really appreciate your time this morning. Obviously, it's been a rough start to the season for the Browns, and all everybody's talking about is Deshaun Watson and the effects that he's having on that offense or the lack thereof. Do you get any sense? Everybody's talking about there needs to be a quarterback change. How do you get the sense of how the locker room feels about Deshaun Watson and anytime they've been asked about him?
I mean, the locker room, the front office, the coaching staff, everybody's kind of been lockstep with the same message that, you know, they believe in Deshaun Watson. They think that he's close. You know, at 1-5, I think it might start wavering here soon. We'll see what happens when they play Cincinnati this weekend. But, you know, the front office has been very, very straight, and the coaching staff has been very clear that they're sticking with Deshaun Watson. And everyone here, you know, in Cleveland honestly believes that ownership is behind that message. They're delivering the message to the front office and to the coaching staff, and it's trickling down to the players. So up until this point, you really haven't heard anything in the locker room of guys asking for Jameis Winston or even wondering aloud. They seem to all have the same message that they believe in Deshaun.
Yeah, they all probably want Flacco back. Hey, Emmett, what about who's next? They lose to the Bengals. Who's next to go out the door?
You know, the one area I would look at might be cornerback. I know that Greg Newsom, you know, is a guy that's due for a contract extension. I think he's the odd guy out at the corner position. We know Denzel Ward is a longtime Cleveland Brown, Ohio kid. He's not going anywhere, and they're very high on MJ Emerson, even though the past 2 weeks he's had a couple of rough games. I think if anybody could be next, it could be Greg Newsom. I've heard names like Myles Garrett thrown out there, and I don't think there's any way in the world they would do that because, you know, fans would start boycotting and they wouldn't go to the games. It'd be way uglier than it is right now if they got rid of Myles Garrett. But I could see one of their corners being traded because they do have some depth at that position.
Now, Emmett, I would imagine that the Guardians are kind of saving the Browns right now, you know, with the media and them playing there and stuff. That probably helps a lot. What is the fan base of the Browns? What do they feel?
Honestly, I don't think the fan base feels right now anything. You know, they've gone through all the emotions, you know, angry, mad, upset, hopeful, destitute. And right now, you're right, everybody's looking at the Guardians and they're going, hey, you know what, we got a team in this city, you know, that are the underdogs. They got a low payroll, but they're still overachieving. They do it with hard work and stealing bases and bunting, you know, really going the opposite way that, you know, you see in Major League Baseball right now, and they're doing the city proud. So, yeah, they're helping the Browns in a certain extent that, yeah, the venom isn't there. But I think a lot of fans are just kind of over it. They realize that the season is over. They don't believe in the quarterback, so I don't think Browns fans are feeling anything. They're pretty numb right now.
Emmett, last thing for you before we let you go. We've been seeing the reports of Nick Chubb potentially returning this week. I saw a little bit of his presser yesterday. If he is able to come back and looks like a shell of himself, what does he do to kind of boost this offense?
You know, his presence, you know, as I talked about what the Guardians mean to Cleveland and how they kind of embody everything the city is about, that's exactly what Nick Chubb is. And that's exactly why he's here with the Browns. They could have cut him. If you read his Players Tribune piece, you know, the Browns said he meant too much to the city, and that's why they kept him back. And he really does. So, you know, I know a bunch of fans that maybe earlier this week planned it on going to the game and booing and showing the Browns how upset they were. And when it was announced that Nick Chubb was coming back, they kind of changed and, okay, I'm still, you know, not happy with the Browns, but we just love Nick Chubb here so much. So it can help at least for a game. And look, they play the Bengals well. Even when the Browns have been terrible, they always give the Bengals a tough game. So at least for a week, Nick Chubb comes back. If they can make it a ball game, it might be a good weekend in Cleveland, but I think it goes right back to, yeah, this season's kind of over for the Browns.
Emmett, great stuff, man. Really appreciate your time this morning. Hopefully we can talk to you again once the Ravens and the Bengals and the Browns square off a couple of times later this year.
Hey, it sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll get to the Funhouse, check in on the text line, see what you guys are talking about, bring in Quick Draw McGraw for that. That's next here on The Fan in a second. But we got a couple of people that have been hanging on hold here for a while. Let's try to grab them real quick. Let's go to Bruce and Easton. Bruce, you're on The Fan.
Hey, guys. How you doing, man? First time caller. I really enjoyed the show.
Thanks,
appreciate
Bruce.
It.
Yeah, man. So earlier you guys were talking about trusting the Ravens. Man, this is something I never thought would come out of my mouth, but field goals are freaking me out now. You know, there's never thought I would say that about Tuck, but he had a great week last week.
Yep.
And secondary, I don't even know anymore. Like Wiggins, I mean, he's as fast as a hiccup, but he's like a pass interference call away. Like every time the ball goes up, and it's him. You know, it's just been over and over. But my real question is, man, because with the trade deadline, I want to see what you guys think about it. You know, I heard the guy from the Baltimore Sun talk about bringing Javon Clowney back. You know we need pass rush. But I don't know how deep we are at the offensive line. Would it make sense to try to grab a ringer or someone out there in case? Because, you know, we're about to hit middle of the season. One of those guys go down, and they're playing well. Do we have anybody to fill that hole? I'm going to kind of let you guys go and see what your thoughts are on maybe looking for an offensive lineman. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, appreciate the call,
Voorhees. Voorhees would slide into left guard, and then McCary could play whatever other position need be. So they do have that luxury to have a six. Now, after that, I guess Jones would be, you know, a guy that they filled in at right tackle before. Mm-hmm. So, but... yeah, they probably got depth like everybody else. I mean, it's hard to go trade for an offensive lineman.
Nobody's just giving them away.
Yeah.
Everybody needs O-line.
And the kicker, don't worry about the kicker. You know what? I had that until he made the 56-yarder. And if you saw him kick, like you said, you know, he had a good game. He had a hell of a game. And his body language was awesome. I just don't think he's gonna miss unless it's like 60-something or, you know, the wind push. I think he's good to go.
I agree. Let's go to John in Bel Air. John, you're on the Fan.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Vinny and Cordell.
Hey, how you doing?
Morning.
Great. You've been talking about through the morning about how well the Ravens are put together to move the ball against virtually any defense, regardless of what they might do or not do. I'd like to piggyback on that first by saying I'm assuming that Keenan Mitchell might be coming back sometime this year, and if he does, that'll even make the Ravens' offense more diverse and even more explosive.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'd like to address is that, to me, sets up the Ravens in a very interesting position for the upcoming draft. Now, here's why. DaCosta has 11 draft picks to work with, and I could see him bundling up some of those picks to maybe get another two or three or four. And I could see him targeting perhaps two offensive linemen because of the uncertainty of Stanley, maybe drafting another defensive back to upgrade over Eddie Jackson or Marcus Williams or maybe a linebacker or maybe even a pass rusher. But here's my question. Last year's draft was really deep in offensive linemen. Vinny, do you see with this draft any quality or any depth in the offensive line, defensive backs, linebackers, or edge rushers? And my real question is, what do you think with this opportunity that the Ravens have that they could do or might do with this flexibility going forward in the draft with the target positions that I just mentioned?
Thanks for the call, John.
Here's the thing is, you're a team that made it to the AFC Championship game last year, and you've got a chance to go just as far or farther this year. The odds on 11 dudes a year from making your team are slim and none. So, yeah, you can use some of those. And Eric knows that, you know, because when you look at it, all right, how many of these guys can really make our team? Otherwise, you're just wasting picks. So use them as ammo to move up, which Eric will probably do. Or maybe, you know, at the trade deadline, they trade something. But I don't know if they – maybe they do. We'll see.
Want to take a trip through the funhouse real quick before we go to break?
Tell you what we do have time for. I got so caught up yesterday that we were at Jones Junction running around, having a good time, selling cars, that we forgot to do Wise Wednesday yesterday. We forgot the most important thing about Wednesday is giving away the $25 Wise Markets gift card. But it's not Wednesday, but we can still give one away. We'll make up for it. I'm looking for caller number 6 at 410-583-1057. Again, a $25 Wise Markets gift card could be yours right now.
There it is. Get calling and get your Wise gift card. Coming up next, we'll get you some news from the Nets. We'll hear a little bit from John Harbaugh's presser from Monday as we continue to look ahead to this Bucks matchup on Monday night. That's next here on The Fan.